the oval of the crater was rimmed with dark rock, raised a few centimeters above the rest of the sloping ground. Within the crater, the dust formed tiny dunes, like wavelets lapping across a pond. "I should have seen them when I was driving the rover," Jamie said to himself. "I should have spotted it and driven around it. Even sick and exhausted, a geologist shouldn't have missed something so goddamned obvious." He glanced over his shoulder at Trumbull. The look on the younger man's face seemed almost gloating, he thought. As Stacy Dezhurova carefully edged the rover up to the rear end of the old vehicle, she reached down with her right hand and activated the laser rangefinder.
"Read it out for me, will you, Jamie?"
30 meters, he said, watching the green glowing digital numbers. 28. 25.
10 meters, okay?
Fine, Trumbull answered.
Jamie.
Fine, he echoed. She slowed the rover still more as Jamie called out. 19 meters.
17.
At precisely 10 meters, Dezhurova stopped the rover. The old vehicle's rounded rear was dead ahead, scoured to glistening metal by 6 years of wind-driven, iron-rich dust particles.
"Piece of cake," Dezhurova said, shutting down the drive motors.
Then she added,
"So far."
Jamie, Trumbull, and Dezhurova suited up and one by one went through the airlock and outside. They left Trudy Hall in the rover. She could call the base for help if an emergency arose. As if help could come in time to do any good, Jamie thought. Still, the safety regulations required that at least one person remain inside the rover at all times. If worst came to worst, Trudy would have to drive back to the base by herself. They walked around the back end of the rover.
"Sand has piled up high on this side," Dezhurova said, her voice sounding calm, almost clinical, in Jamie's earphones.
"It's pretty soft stuff," Jamie said. "Like fluff. Connors and I were able to shovel it away after we got caught in a sandstorm down on the canyon floor." Trumbull dug a gloved hand into the sandbank.
"Fluff is right. Look."
He tossed his handful of sand into the air. It drifted like powder, falling slowly in the light Martian gravity.
"We could ski on this," Trumbull said. "Hey, that'd be something for tourists. Ski Mars!"
He laughed while Jamie gritted his teeth. "Is he serious?" Jamie wondered. "Or is he just trying to get a rise out of me?"
"The solar panels are caked with dust," Dezhurova pointed out.
Looking up toward the top of the rover's segments, Jamie saw that she was right. Wind blew the sand onto the panels, but didn't blow it off again. Trumbull said,
"This stuff is pretty damn gritty, too. Probably gouged up the panels."
"Come this way," Dezhurova said. "The hatch is on the lee side."
Jamie followed her, watching the prints her boots made on the ground. It was firm here, but a few meters away was the lip of the crater. Dezhurova pressed the hatch's control stud.
"No joy."
"With the solar panels out, the batteries must have died years ago," Trumbull said.
"We must go to manual," Dezhurova muttered,
pulling a slim cordless power screwdriver from the tool set nestled in her suit's thigh patch. Jamie watched her unfasten the panel that covered the manual control. The screws resisted, frozen by time and gritty dust. Dezhurova began swearing softly in Russian as the power screwdriver whined away. Jamie heard her mumbling in his earphones and worried that a slip of the screwdriver could tear her gloves. A rip in the spacesuit's gloves would be far worse than a skinned knuckle. The power driver finally got the first screw moving, and Dezhurova's muttered curses stopped. The other screws went much more easily.
"Always the way," she said, without looking up from her work. "The first one you pick is always the beach."
The wheel that opened the hatch manually was even tougher. Dezhurova could not budge it. Trumbull eagerly grabbed at it, and together the two of them grunted and heaved until the airlock hatch cracked open. Then the turning became easier, and the door slid all the way open.
"Okay, Jamie," Dezhurova said, panting. "After you."
"You stay outside, Stacy," he reminded her, "until we check out the interior."
"Right, Chief," she said.
Wondering if she were using Trumbull's nickname for him unconsciously or deliberately, Jamie wedged one boot on the middle rung of the short ladder and gripped the edges of the open hatch with both hands. Then he pulled himself up inside the airlock, noting in the back of his mind that being accustomed to Mars's one-third gravity had its drawbacks. In the suit and backpack, it took a real effort to lift himself. The manual override for the inner hatch was just beneath the electrical control panel. It, too, was hard to turn at first, but Jamie got the wheel turning by himself, and the inner hatch cranked slowly open. "Okay, I'm going in," he said. "Me too," said Trumbull. Hearing him grunt as he pulled himself into the airlock, Jamie grinned inwardly that Dex had to exert himself to climb up, too. The interior was a mess. The four of them had been sick with scurvy when the Russians had come to rescue them. They had left the rover without a thought to tidying up. The sheets on the bunks were roiled and wrinkled, just as they had left them. Jamie thought they still looked sweaty, though he knew that any moisture would have evaporated years ago. He heard Trumbull behind him. "So, this is where it happened." The younger man's voice was softer than usual. Turning to look at him, Jamie saw that Dex was peering through the hatch that connected the rover's middle segment, which had been converted into a mobile biology lab. "This is where Brumado and Malader discovered the lichen," Trumbull said, almost as if he were gazing upon a holy shrine. "That's right," Jamie said. The memory that came to his mind was of Joanna, frightened and lovely Joanna, with her big dark eyes and her lonely, vulnerable waif's face. The child woman he had fallen in love with, the daughter of Alberto Brumado, whom he had married, the woman who became an adult at last and walked away from him. "She never loved me," Jamie realized for the millionth time. "Maybe she thought she did at first, but she never loved me. Was I really in love with her?" Shaking his head inside the helmet, he thought, "Whatever it was, you certainly made a mess of the whole thing." "Boy, what some museum would pay to have this chunk of hardware in their hands," Trumbull said, the awe in his voice giving way to excitement. Jamie started to snap out a reply, but caught himself in time. "This hardware's much too heavy for us to carry back to Earth," he told himself. "The ascent section of the LAV couldn't possibly lift off." As if reading Jamie's thoughts, Trumbull went on. "We'll make this into an exhibit for the visitors. Maybe park it back down on the canyon floor where the discovery was originally made and bus the tourists out there." Jamie got a vision of the Navajo women who spread their blankets on the sidewalks along Santa Fe's central plaza to sell trinkets to the tourists. "Are you all right?" Stacy Dejerova's voice demanded in their earphones. "We're inside," Jamie reported. "No problems." "I'm coming in," she said. "We must check out the electrical systems."
"Right."
Nearly an hour later, Dejerova announced what they had already known. "Dead as a dinosaur," she said, sitting in the pilot's chair. Standing behind her, gazing at the blank screens and lifeless gauges of the control panel, Jamie nodded inside his helmet. "What did you expect?" he asked himself. "She's been sitting out here for 6 years, 100 below zero every night, dust covering the solar panels. The batteries must have died within a few days, a week at best. The fuel cells are gone. Hydrogen leaked away."
"We'll have to tow it," Trumbull said.
"If we can," said Jamie.
"Why not?"
Jamie wanted to shrug, but the hard suit defeated it. "We'll have to try it and see."
"Okay," said Dejerova. "Let's get to it before the sun goes down."
Sundown. Sol 15. Jamie still felt a slight shudder of unease when he looked at the sun. It was eerily small, shrunken, a visible reminder of how far they were from home. Now the distant sun was almost touching the uneven horizon, an unblinking warning red eye set in a glowing coppery sky. Jamie had to turn his entire body inside his cumbersome hard suit to see the other way. The sky was dark there, with a few stars already glistening brightly. Earth was an evening star now, he knew, but he had no time to search it out or to wait for the aurora. As the shadows of twilight reached across the cliffs toward them, they hitched the buckyball cable from the winch drum sticking out from the nose of their rover to an attachment hook on the tail of the old vehicle, then went inside their vehicle one by one.
It took another half hour to vacuum off the dust, although none of them got out of their suits. Dezhurova